I'm pointing to the wrong room and to the wrong person. And oddly, they didn't respond. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable. It's Friday, the 25th of March. Welcome to the roundtable to our panel discussion for this Friday, the 25th. And have a lovely, hopefully everyone, if those who partake in such will enjoy a lovely Easter weekend. Mm-hmm. Kids are off today, which means that my commute was only like 35 minutes. It was great.
No school buses.
No school buses to contend with. Nobody going to college. It was really great. Let me introduce our panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir, to you. And I have to tell you, just so everybody knows, because we're getting a little bit of mail on this, people who watch this. On the video, right?
Right.
So watch it. That we're having a transfer
just,
of the. Oh yes,
yeah,
we're
okay.
Having a transfer of the control room, and that will last for 4 days. So you won't be getting the video till next Wednesday. You'll just have to listen to the voices. But that you should be able to do.
Yes, WAMC.org, and you'll be able to listen to the feed, and then we'll get our.
Video back.
Our camera's up and
running
again.
And you see Rich Honan sitting here in a t-shirt today.
Actually, we're all wearing clown suits right now.
No.
But you will never see
did
that.
Did we grab you out of the gym? What?
Do I was going to say.
No.
Does it look like I go to a gym? No.
No.
That does not work.
Rosemary Armeo is here. She's University of Albany journalism professor as well as an investigative reporter. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
And Rich Honan is here, corporate attorney, and we always love having Rich here, and thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So let's start with the news of the day, and that is, of course, what is continuing to unfold in Brussels. We know now that there were Americans involved and Americans who were hurt and killed, correct?
They weren't involved. They were victims.
Victims. That's what
yeah.
I meant. Yes. I apologize. Okay. I meant as far as the,
right.
the numbers. And then also we there was a raid yesterday in France that thwarted another plot. And of course, there is still more great concern that there is more activity and that Europe is a threat for more violence. So that is kind of not a lot more than we knew yesterday, but we know a little bit more and who we're looking for. And so... What do you make of that, Rosemary?
Me first. I think right now, interesting news is coming out of New York, where Americans have discovered Iranian hackers have gone into a dam outside of New York City.
That's war.
And yeah, it is war. And notice that the United States is on it. They are figuring out we got a weakness here. We have to do something about it. The Belgians, the French, the Europeans have not done that. The threat from ISIS... has declined in the actual Middle East. That's what Kerry has said, and I think he's right. The president has said that all along. It has increased in Europe. That is not the same as us being in danger. We are on it in a way that they are not. So that's I think that's some good news.
Alan, what do you think?
Well, I think what happens is when you push the button too hard, we just saw Kerry appearing and announcing that they were going to take a huge chunk out of ISIS. I think what happens is that when it gets to be a point where your enemies are really doing you in, then you have no choice but to really go for them. And I think that if that is what ISIS has been after all along, they're going to get it, and I suspect they're going to be sorry about it.
I hear all that. I don't understand objectively what is the ramp up. You know, I'm watching the same news that the feed that we're watching with Kerry talking about. What's the new battle? You know, what's the new front that we're opening, or is he just saying you know more of the same, or has he announced some kind of new initiative? Because I don't see anything more than what we've been doing before, whatever that is. I guess
that is the issue that have we been doing enough? Several Republican candidates.
If not, Rosemary, why not?
Right. I think that we have, and I think that the president has gotten into trouble for saying this aloud, but it's true. Our efforts in the Middle East have been successful, and ISIS has been withdrawing. There's an effort now in Iraq to get back Mosul. We have them on the run. So they've opened up this new front in Europe. Europe and have had great success, in part because the Europeans have not been as effective as the Americans in counterterrorism. I think we need to bolster that. I think that's what Kerry is working on. We need to watch our and our own country and on multiple fronts, not just ISIS. It's the Iranians who are going after our infrastructure and cyber, and probably the Chinese and other and Koreans too.
Right, quite right.
So I actually think that continuing with the efforts underway and staying on guard, the Hillary Clinton Obama plan is working. That's what I'm saying.
But the one word that I didn't hear from your mouth was Russians. The Russians are taking great credit for having taken a big bite out of ISIS. And by the way, other than what you hear on media in the United States, they're getting a lot of credit, you know, for basically having done that. Listen, I want to pick a fight with Rich. A huge amount of American resources go into our defense establishment. In order to do that, you have to have an enemy. And you have to have an enemy who is credible, who we can say, okay, this huge defense apparatus that we have in this country, Eisenhower warned us about, needs to be justified. And I think to some degree, this whole thing offers that rationale. Rich?
Well, I think that we're, I think we've had an enemy. We know who the enemy is. I mean, the enemy is not necessarily a nation state. But we've fought proxy wars, my whole life, right? I mean, the Cold War was a series of proxy wars. Vietnam was, right, an outgrowth of a series of Indo-Chinese proxy wars. We have, unfortunately, there's a lot of experience in us fighting a foe that is either financed or being supported by some larger
entity. But do we have
entity.
To? But Rich, do we have to have an enemy in order to justify the defense establishment? That's the question. When I keep going back to this guy.
Are you saying we're making up the enemy?
I think ISIS is a real enemy. I'm saying.
So are the Russians.
I'm saying, could you dispatch with them much more easily than you are? Have they gotten too far? Look,
ISIS or the Russians now? I'm sorry.
No. The Russians did their thing with ISIS and got a lot of credit for it.
They didn't actually. That's really a misnomer. They didn't do anything.
Yeah, they didn't do anything with ISIS, and I don't think anybody.
They did.
They propped up Assad. The Syrian government.
Yeah.
Well,
and they will do it again. They have not really withdrawn as much as our media has let it be.
But I don't see.
They haven't. They pulled out of.
No, I'm commenting on Alan's commentary.
So hard for me. So hard for me.
Rosemary's right. I mean, you're. I think you're buying in. See, the problem is you have to. You have to say that the Russians are taking credit for defeating ISIS or for narrowing ISIS.
Not only taking it, but getting it.
But that's because you're buying into the administration's narrative that ISIS is in fact being contained, and there's zero objective evidence to that effect. And I would talk either if you're talking just the acreage in their Middle Eastern caliphate,
yes.
or in the efforts that they're expanding efforts throughout Europe and now into the United States. Whether that's ISIS or whether that's the Iranians, I don't necessarily make that distinction.
I mean, of course I can't win the argument if you're going to define ISIS as anything in the Middle East. But the Iranians are not the same as ISIS. It's just not true.
I agree with that.
I keep going back to the guy, this not the present congressman, but the one before him from Groton, Connecticut. And I always would ask him, I would say to him, why do we need another multi-billion-dollar submarine? And the guy would say, you have to have a tough time with it. And he would say, oh, well, the Chinese. Well, the Chinese, who we're doing a lot of business with and everything else, don't really do it for most Americans. So I think this is really something that most of them are chopping people's heads off and the rest of it that we can get into. But I still think that the American defense establishment needs a war.
So let me ask this question and frame it in this way and see what kind of answer we get. So top Belgian officials on Thursday acknowledged miscommunications and other errors in the prelude to the Brussels suicide bombings as growing evidence of links to the Paris assaults by the Islamic State suggested that a wide network of trained attackers leading back to Syria is now rooted in Europe. Mm-hmm. So if we take that at its face value, then from what I'm hearing from you, there is still criticism to be had, Rich, for the administration for not doing, because certainly the Republican presidential candidates have seized on this and says that the president is partially responsible as well. And I'm just interested in a response to that. When you have Brussels and Belgian officials, top Belgian officials saying, yeah, we screwed up.
Right.
So we kind of have a fall guy here, but then is there still culpability on behalf of the United States?
I don't, and look, I'll distance myself from the Republican candidates, if you will, but I don't criticize the administration necessarily for the results. I don't criticize the Belgian authorities. I think it is an incredibly difficult problem, you know, a Hydra-headed problem, mm-hmm. right? And it's going to take years, you know, generations to get under any kind of control. So I don't criticize either the administration or the Europeans for the results, because I acknowledge it's a difficult problem that is becoming more difficult every day. The only thing I would criticize, and my point to Alan about Kerry, is I criticize what I perceive as the lack of clear-headed, realistic looking at where we really are. I don't think it advances the argument to say, well, we're doing a little better with ISIS in the Middle East, A, because I don't think it's necessarily true, and B, I don't think that's the argument. I mean, I think the argument is, how are we doing with this entire scourge of kind of global terror?
Rosemary, I know you have a very serious look on your face.
I think that there is a clear-headed view. It's just not accepted by many of the Republicans and anti-Obama forces. And the view is that ISIS is not the be-all, end-all threat that we are painting it at. Yes, they chop off heads, which is horrible, but there are worse groups and more dire threats. I think the Russians. I think actually Mitt Romney had that right.
Yeah, and remember what Obama said to him? Obama said the 80s called. They want their foreign policy back.
And I think that he has changed. He has come around on that, Rich, which is
not
fine.
Admittedly.
No, I think that's
well,
not
Bush
true.
Bush had it too. I looked into his eyes. He said, "Remember that? He was a good man." I knew that.
Yeah, I think that the threat to the United States. Here's another thing: is that the United States is not. No one wants it to be the policeman of the world. And the problem right now in Europe is not our problem. ISIS is not the same threat to the United States as it is to Europe. It's right there. The Syrian command of ISIS has absolute control over their operatives there. And they have cells that are operating
Rosemary,
in multi-countries.
There's an attack every day.
There's a
major attack every day, whether it's Ankara, whether it's...
The Ivory Coast, we haven't even mentioned that.
Right,
there were
right.
more people killed in the Ivory Coast on a beach.
Right.
Than there were in Belgium, mm, right. and we have not
between
mentioned
Boko
it here.
Between Boko Haram
but
and Al Qaeda, you know, the Arabian Peninsula and all their subsidiaries, and you know.
And so you say we have to have a realistic view of it. Well, you know, ISIS is now separate from Al Qaeda, but they seem the same.
Oh,
they
it's
look
one
the same.
It's one threat. I agree. Yeah. It's not the only threat. I think it's one threat. All I'm saying is I don't think it advances the ball for us to say, well, we're making some headway, or to say, we have a strategy and it's working. I think by any objective standard, to say that our approach on global terror in general is working, and I'll include the Russians because I think to say that our approach is working or that we have it contained, I think that's unrealistic.
Or do we want it contained as much?
Yeah,
that's what you're saying. That's my issue.
All I know is Michael just wrote in, "Hey, Rich, have you heard? Syrian forces are about to take Palmyra. Isn't that a reduction in their territory and an indication that the administration and Russian tactics are working, Michael?"
You mean that at the cost of hundreds of thousands of refugees and however many lives it's going to take, we may on a good day get back to the status quo that we had 2 years ago? If you look upon that as success, I don't look upon that as the same way.
Well, Peter says Alan is right. We need our boogeyman. First the commies, now the Muslims. Peter,
I would agree with that. I would agree with that if I couldn't point to what I think are real boogeymen, right?
I think there are real threats, and this dam in New York makes me really nervous.
And you know, before that, you know, the Wall Street Journal was reporting, you know, months ago about truly, you know, masked people looking like terrorists, masked people with high-powered weapons shooting out sources in the power grid.
Right.
They're just like basically shooting at like junction boxes or something, but in in very scary attacks, and they kind of went, and you know, they never found him. And
the other thing that strikes me is that, and we've been talking around this, is that it isn't one country who's going to solve this, or one country that will protect its own borders and everybody else is at danger. If the Europeans and the Americans don't work together, if we don't involve the Middle Eastern countries that are that have the same interests we do, this isn't going to work. This is a worldwide effort.
But you're right. I fully agree. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
No, that's okay.
I fully agree. And the problem is that's somewhat at odds with the statement that the United States can't be the world's policeman. We kind of have to be. Someone has to be. And now I'm not saying we have to be the policeman at the meaning we will do everything.
Pay all the bills.
Yeah, right. I'm saying but somebody has to take charge. And whether you say that is the historic role of the United States, or whether you just say because of the geopolitical situation right now. It's easier for a single country as opposed to, say, the European Union, which has its own issues. It's easier for a single country, especially a country that has the kind of military strength, you know, trumped up though it may be.
So you're ignoring my central concept that
you think military...
we have a huge defense industry that has to be supported with a rationale.
Okay, we just have about 30 seconds.
Alan, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think in here there's a real threat, you know, and you're right. I would liken it to the huge industry we have in the war against poverty, the same thing, right?
That's ridiculous.
It's the exact same, right?
So you're saying one is not productive, the other helps its citizens.
Let's take a break, and by the time we come back, I'm sure they'll both agree with each other, or not. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to the Roundtable Panel, Roundtable at WAMC.org. I don't want to tell tales out of school or anything, but Alan is very pleased with the mail that we're getting, so I'm going to throw it over to him and allow him to read some of the letters that we've been getting.
Okay, and then Abigail wrote, and what did she say? I'll tell you in a moment. There'll always be a boogeyman. It's about discerning the difference between what we should address and should not address. I think Alan is right. Let me read that part again. I think Alan is right. We aggrandize certain boogeymen in order to justify military spending. And then she added, furthermore, it is ridiculous to equate war on poverty with our country's addiction to interventionist warfare. Compare their budgets.
Rich.
What Alan's saying is if we didn't need to, we have a Defense Department just because we want a Defense Department, not because we needed to actually defend the country. Is that the thesis here?
It helps to boost our budget.
So Alan's saying we're spending all this. We have to just, and I say we have to justify, you know, what in the last year, $3.7 trillion over the Obama administration and entitlements. We have to justify that by having this so-called war on poverty, which we've been abjectly losing for the last 50 years.
Entitlements are, when you say the word entitlements as if it's a dirty word, I hope you understand you're talking about health care so that people who never had it before can have it, or people who can't afford to feed their kids get a little extra help in feeding their kids. How do you compare that with another atom bomb?
Have no problem with that. All I'm saying is that if you're making the thesis that government programs sometimes exist to target what they're supposed to target, but then kind of take on a life of their own, and I would grant you that the Defense Department is much like that. I would ask you to grant that our quote war on poverty and our reliance on entitlements has taken on the same flavor.
Okay. So anyway, Nate says, what about the fact that our intervention in other countries' affairs is the reason why we have terrorism in the first place? And John says, if we weren't there, they would not be here. ISIS did not create the situation. They exploited. We are not policing the world. We are defending the borders of our empire. The Russians are doing the same. Elliot says, Alan is on to something. How can you justify spending 50% of the entire discretionary budget on defense if you do not have a threat out there scaring people? Remember Snowball in Animal Farm? And Jamie says, maybe we should start by not using the word terrorist. Our problems are thousands of years of Western attitude toward the Middle East and in our belief we know better. Hey, Jamie, in all honesty, when we blow up innocent people and families, that's terrorism. I mean, they know what that is. Okay. Robert says, Rosemary, a statement that what's happening in Europe is not our threat smacks of America's 1940 isolationism. Do you really need to see a 21st century version of Pearl Harbor before before you can recognize the need for the world's most powerful country to take major action, including our troops going into combat to crush this threat before something vast and truly terrible happens. And
well,
by the way,
we had that. That was September 11th.
Well, 9/11, but I have the feeling that there are an awful lot of atomic devices out there, some of which we don't even know where they are.
And some of which we have graciously agreed to fund.
And if you're telling me if they get their hands on them that they won't use them, I'll tell you right now they will.
Dude, it wasn't my idea to give the Iranians the atomic program. That was you. Okay,
whoa,
so when that happens, then you can raise your hand.
That was
say,
like a left hook out of nowhere.
No, that was not. Wait, nice.
That program, that plan. I'm sorry.
Stop
development.
That is so rich.
I'm still reacting to Rich calling Alan dude.
I'm too old to be told. I'm too old to be called dude.
I can't get by that. But okay,
right,
go ahead.
Right. Okay. Okay. And Jack says the U.S. indeed has enemies, but on the other hand, we are making up or overstating enemies, particularly North Korea. I don't agree with that. I think he's another one. I think if that guy could put a device on the front of a missile and send it to someplace strategic, he would do it.
Yeah, and not only that, I think we'd all. I think we're actually doing not very much about North. There's not a heck of a lot we can do about North Korea. I almost think we might all agree we would do more if we could think of something effective to do.
Well, no.
I used to say that about George Bush. Why did we attack Iraq, which was doing nothing to us and had nothing to do with the 9/11, and not North Korea, which had a bomb and was threatening us with it?
Well, also, so there is the small problem of China, you know, China sitting there.
Right.
I think you have Russia in the Middle East, so there's no way to go anyplace and say, okay, you can have a free ride on that one.
There's a difference. But I think the Chinese have been called into this and are obviously working with our people in order to contain the Koreans. I don't know that it's gonna work out.
So at the risk of really making everybody lose their mind, so you both just agree. So you said that that Bush was wrong to go into Iraq, and Alan, you said
very
that,
wrong.
And you said that your policy in North Korea would be to look to the Chinese to help lead. So what candidate has espoused those two policies?
Oh, yeah. No, too dangerous. Way too dangerous. Good point. You have that sort of look on your face, Rich. I wish you could be seen on TV, because then you could see. I don't wish to in any way, you know, say anything that would make you not stay on our panel, because we love having you here. But it is a smirk.
When you guys start pulling out the Trump playbook, I have to smirk, right?
You know, Trump, that's ridiculous, Rich. It's right. Like Trump did not invent this foreign policy. These are not his plans. That's just crazy. He has not come up with anything that I would say, oh, yeah, there's a good idea.
Alan, you're going to continue with your laudatory letters?
Thank you. If the government, I don't know, I'm looking at this. Joe always criticized me, and yesterday he said to me about somebody else's letter. He said to me, maybe you shouldn't have read that.
Which one?
The Libya letter. Remember that?
Yeah, I know that. Well, which one?
Well, I start reading them, and then I get down to
the fourth line now.
It's a Buck versus Bell.
That's off topic. We're having a discussion coming up at 10 o'clock with a journalist who was on the New York Times editorial board. Who wrote a book called Imbeciles about the Buck versus Bell decision. I was reading the lead-in earlier, and I think they're responding to that. So it's a little bit off topic, but that's okay.
Okay. Dear Rich, a more apt comparison to the self-sustaining mode of the military / industrial complex is the war on drugs, which has a life of its own and has not, for all the money to spend that lies in his room, made much of a difference in the drug problem. And that's from Jules, who often takes a more centrist left position.
That's an excellent point. That is a better example.
We have too many wars on that whole war imagery.
None of which we're winning.
Well, that's true, Rich. But we have this massive heroin problem in the United States right now. I mean, massive.
I know.
And the question is, so do you do nothing? Do you have like Vermont a needle exchange which will help some people? You save one life. Is it better than saving no lives? If you give methadone to some people and some people abuse methadone and sell it to their
neighbors? I like the Vancouver method of opening up a lab where drugs are allowed. You could use it in that one place. It's sort of like the Wired approach. Remember that the cable series?
You know, there's some problems that we can't fix because...
Well, you could
try. I'm just saying, there's some things that you can't fix because politically you can't get it done. And then there's some problems that even if we all agreed, I don't know, even if we all said, let's mm-hmm. do whatever we would still not be able to come up with an idea of kind of how to fix it. Right. And I think the heroin.
What do you want to ignore it? Yeah. How can you ignore heroin?
I'm not saying to ignore it, Alan. I'm just saying if somebody said, okay, Rich, you know, do whatever you want, I don't know. I don't know that anybody
knows
what
they would do. You are czar of the world.
You
have the power to right. do anything you want. You what, still
what would
can't
you do,
fix it.
Alan, what right. would you do? How do you fix
well,
that?
Well, I would do what I
would. I'm not saying I would give up. I'm just saying.
I would do some of the things we're doing. The Narcan, for example, which is saving lives all over. Mm-hmm. And it took all of this attention to get that done.
What about the idea that the whole reliance on prescription drugs has fueled the opioid epidemic?
I think we're dealing with it. We are dealing with it.
How do you attack that at the source?
We're getting it much harder to get those drugs for any sustained period of time. And I got to tell you, I think that the doctors have immense influence on the way that's being done because I would have done more than they're doing to stop it. But in any case, David says, I don't believe the U.S. has avoided the type of major terrorist attack in Europe, largely due to our improved technology and vigilance. We have the right. advantage that terrorists can't easily travel by land from the Middle East, and we don't have the same kind of disadvantaged Muslim enclaves in the U.S. that foster discontent. Well,
he said it better than I did. I agree. I think that's a very cogent.
Well, you know.
Wait, do we not have enclaves here in the United States?
We have. Our problem in the United States has overwhelmingly been low.
Enclave has a pejorative. I'm not meaning to say it that way.
It's
I'm saying community.
It's the whole cell idea. No, our problem in the United States up to now has been lone wolves. It's been people acting alone or with a spouse.
Yeah. But you've been saying that for days, Rosemary. But
it's true.
You know, okay, that was redundant. So.
Don't be redundant when you're being truthful.
Okay, so it's true you say that, but all it takes is one madman with a device. It doesn't need a cell, and we are certainly going to have. We are certainly going to have that in the United States.
I'm not saying we're not going to have trouble. I'm saying we have a different sort of trouble, and our solutions to the problem are not the same. Cannot be the same as the Europeans.
I want to talk about Donald Trump for a moment and the feud between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. I think we spoke about this off the air yesterday, but we didn't actually get into it.
For you guys, Trump versus Cruz is like, remember in the old days when Iran was fighting Iraq, and you're like, I don't care who wins as long as they both lose.
Well,
you
the larger question is. Would Donald Trump, if the nominee, be able to win a general election given the numbers that he has with women?
He will be able to win. Anybody who doesn't think that Donald Trump can win...
Women.
No, I understand what you're saying. I find the guy repulsive, as I have from the very beginning. But I am telling you, he has struck a certain kind of nerve in the American populace about PC, about what you can say, about the fact that he's...
But with white men, not women.
Not women. Well, the numbers are overwhelming against him.
I mean, 70%.
So far. I am not arguing for Donald Trump, as you all know.
So far? What can he possibly say to get out of the hole he's in?
I don't think that's right.
I thought Republicans were bad in the last election cycle when they were talking about their foolishness on rape. But Donald Trump is a whole new thing. It's women's looks. It's repulsive, as you say. I don't think he can get out of it.
And especially when you're running against, presumably,
Cruz.
A woman.
Or Cruz in this case.
We're talking about his numbers in the general election.
Yeah.
And the polls that have come out in the general election.
10 points.
Not only show him losing, but also showing him... again, with, I think, 70%
With
women.
And here's the thing. There's no backing off. He's getting... This whole thing with Cruz is completely unnecessary. And if he's running against Hillary, you've already seen his first ad.
I agree with you. I mean, but as I understand the story, it started with a pro-Cruz PAC.
That's correct.
You know, running an ad against the guy's wife. And we all know, you know, when
Donald.
Yeah, that we know how he responds.
The PAC played him.
They
Rich.
Did, but I will say on the Republican side, every time there's been a dirty trick in the Republican campaign, it's always been either Cruz or affiliates of Cruz. Right?
Well, we're not going to defend Cruz on this.
Yeah,
program.
I know, but
okay.
It
is interesting that despite the fact that Cruz, in my opinion, has so many deficiencies. Including all of the Republicans who are now endorsing him, who really hate him, and we know they hate him. And yet they're doing it. They are still after Trump to the point. And every time they do it, I think it adds to Trump saying, I am not the quintessential insider.
Okay, but when Ted Cruz says, look, Donald, real men don't bully women. Our spouses and our children are off bounds. It was not acceptable for a big, loud New York bully to attack my wife.
There goes Donald, the New York, anti-Semitism in there.
Donald,
thanks,
you're a sniveling coward. Leave Heidi the hell alone.
So somebody said, look, Ted, this is an opportunity. So where is Ted on
this?
Nobody
has to tell him. He knows when there's an opportunity.
His people are around him. So where is Mr. Ted Cruz on a woman's right to handle her, to be in charge of her own body? Where is Mr. Ted Cruz when it comes to Planned Parenthood?
Where's Trump on that? They're both horrible as far as policies.
Rosemary, two wrongs don't make a right. I'm telling you that all of a sudden this guy is playing to the women's vote when he is an anathematic.
I would make it even less fundamental than that. Because, look, you can't get the abortion debate. Everybody kind of is where it is, and you can't argue about it. Everybody ends up mad, and nobody ends up changing their mind. But if where was Cruz? Look, I think he's a slimy guy. Okay,
slimy.
On this issue. Where when Cruz said, you come after my pack. That was not Cruz's, but clearly supported him when they start attacking Trump's wife. Where is Cruz, Mr. Man of Morality, to stand up and say,
this has nothing to do with women. This has to do with the guy saying, oh, I'm protecting my little woman. Yeah. And that's what they're playing to.
I like it.
Heidi Cruz is an amazing woman. She's both good looking and brilliant. And the same with Melania Trump, who surprisingly, because she's a model, you would think the stereotype. They are both amazing women. They do not need to be protected by their husbands. And they should not be part of this debate. It has nothing to do with presidential politics.
If it works, they're going to do it. And they think it works.
Well, I don't know. Joe's question is, okay, so when this is all said and done,
75%.
How do you win an American election without
Washington
the support
Post.
Of women and without the support of blacks
correct.
Like that,
ask,
that, that Obama had?
Ask
correct.
All the great dictators in history who were not supposed to win because they were clowns. Ask them and who said stupid things and picked on.
Hitler didn't attack women.
Nobody attacked Jews.
He attacked Jews, yeah.
And after he was in power, I
no,
believe.
No.
That's true. The anti. Right. He won a
go,
lot of. Yeah,
go
you're
read
right.
The book.
You're right.
Yeah.
But I still think the Hitler comparison remains somewhat far. I'd like to think it remains somewhat far afield of the American election. But Joe's point is the same. I don't know that women will vote for Trump, and if they don't, and he wins the nomination, I don't see how you'll win the general election without, no one has actually won without that segment.
Will somebody tell me how Berlusconi got elected in Italy and with the prostitutes and the rest of the thing and maintain his popularity? And how, for example, the Equal Rights Amendment, which I was wildly for, went down largely because there were enough women to support it.
Well, I got into trouble with this yesterday, but you do not have to be a man to be sexist. That's how institutional sexism works. Women begin to see the oppression of women as important to society.
Also, the rhetoric surrounding the Equal Rights Amendment, I think if everybody had it to do all over again, I think that the rhetoric surrounding it was mishandled, right? Instead of saying this is a fundamental right that is already there, it was... You are so stupid if you don't get this, and that doesn't usually carry the day.
We're five minutes late for break, so let me take a break.
We'll
be right back, and we'll continue. And I know I got you all riled up, take a break, and we'll be right back.
Just the way it is. It's sexist.
Support for WAMC comes from The Whistling Kettle, Troy, and Boston Spa, featuring wellness teas including Feel Better, a tea with echinacea designed to boost the immune system, thewhistlingkettle.com. And Albany Marriott, with 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge and airport transportation, Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com.
That was the break. I know
Call
you're still arguing. It's a break. Look, we only have 7 minutes left. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Hermeo, and Rich Honan are here. And so Joe Biden spoke yesterday and talked, finally came out against Mitch McConnell's Biden rule remark. The one thing that struck me about it was what took him so long?
I agree. Why wasn't that this day?
They thought if they ignored it, it would go away. But
I didn't understand that story. So did McConnell just say it again? Or
No. He was reacting to something that happened 2 weeks ago. While, by the way, according to the new CNN Washington Post poll, shows that 2/3 of Americans believe that not only should the Supreme Court nominee have hearings, but ultimately should go on to the high court. So those two things kind of go together.
So why are they doing it? Because they're on the assert. They're on the pro side, and they're winning, and they want to just pile on right now. That's why Biden is doing it right now. Look, the whole political system is being run by the pollsters. They poll, they see if something catches on, it's like going to the grocery store. We'll have 5 pounds of potatoes, please.
You know, I agree with you. To me, when I make the analogy, Alan, we were talking about Massachusetts before. You ever go like on a whale watch?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, so somebody sees a whale and everybody runs to one side of the boat, and then somebody sees a whale on the other side and everybody runs to the other side.
And the boat sinks.
Right. Well, but that's how the pollsters are. The pollsters run to one, you know.
What point, whale watch have you
and
been
the
pollster, on?
Everybody runs to one side, and then they point the other way, and everybody runs to the other side.
Exactly.
And you're right. Boy, can you think of two people less relevant to American politics right now than Joe Biden and Mitch McConnell?
Oh, no, I think you're wrong. I think Joe Biden is extraordinarily popular with the American people.
Yeah, but that's different, popular and irrelevant.
And McConnell
not the same.
Is something incarnate.
My conspiracy theory,
he's holding
Alan.
Up an entire
side of the boat.
Yeah, he's holding up an entire branch of government. I don't know how
he's
irrelevant that is.
Harry Reid did it, right? And he became irrelevant.
No.
Remember, Alan, my conspiracy theory is that Obama allows Hillary to get indicted and then moves Biden in at the convention. So
yeah, that's your theory. I know that's your theory.
I'll put that one up there with your military-industrial complex.
Gosh.
I reject your theory.
Okay, it's getting weirder and weirder. Reel them in, please, Joe.
Okay. I want to talk about Gary Shandling.
Okay.
That was
Gary
so sad.
Shandling passed away yesterday, 66 years old. Why didn't you like him?
I just find him to be bland and, you know, not exciting.
Oh, my God, not bland.
Oh, he's
bland.
So funny. So dry.
Nah. Had a wonderful, I would argue, two classic television programs.
Yep.
It's the Gary Shandling Show and also the Larry Sanders Show. Although I think it's somewhat undisputed that the Larry Sanders Show is one of the most sort of iconic television programs and not only brought in a whole new wave for cable television, half-hour television comedy, but also was so satirical and so wonderfully written and funny.
Either I or you need a brain transplant.
Let's take a vote.
Why does that need to be mutually exclusive?
Okay, we both need a brain transplant.
I think the best thing I saw about this was by Kevin Marshall, comedy guy, used to be at the Times Union, and he did a parody. This is the theme to Gary's death.
Yeah.
And I thought he would really have laughed at that.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, he was the last real thing that he did was Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Jerry Seinfeld, which talking about death and talking about his death.
But exactly. And here is the point that we all have to remember. The guy was 66 years old. I'm 74 years old. People are telling me.
So you outlived him.
I did. And I'm going to outlive other people. and that's just the way that it is. We are ageist in the society, and we don't talk about it enough, Rosemary.
What is it about Jewish comedians and talking about death, obsession with death?
Well, Freud led the way, and he wasn't a comedian.
He was kind of funny. Once he got a couple of drinks in him.
He had a couple good lines.
Look up Eros and Thanatos.
Yeah. It just seems to me, and it was one of those deaths too, that because he was so young,
you don't like that. It's too close for comfort.
But you also, it's one of those where you're like, oh, really? And you know, a lot of them you see and you're like, oh. All right, and this one I really felt bad about.
Yeah,
like,
Robin Williams, I felt bad about it.
Yeah,
I felt bad about
too.
It too. I mean, it's and that was particularly sad because of the consequences. Or, you know, the
new way of doing it.
Yeah,
circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, it was really quite sad. We have 2 minutes.
Okay, what
actually, we have a minute and a half.
Hmm.
You want to do it?
Okay,
letters?
Here we go. Okay. I like this rich fellow. He brings out the best in the panel. All right, and that's.
I'm going to put my BlackBerry down right now.
Okay, and Dan says Biden says under his breath what Trump says into a microphone. Okay,
Biden has long been criticized for speaking openly what he says. Yeah, I think that's been wrong.
Were they comparing him to Trump?
Yeah. Trump says it out loud.
It says under his breath what Trump says in the microphone.
Yeah, but Trump is just so bombastic and such a jerk about it, you know, and Biden can kind of get,
My sister was on the Washington Post panel that interviewed him. He came in and they ran a transcript of that.
Oh, that was a good interview.
Yeah, she said, you know, that... he's not a clown. If you see him as stupid and treat him that way, you do it at your own peril.
Do you want? Did you watch that whole video?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I mean that was really good.
There are interesting pieces that have been done on that, like the 10 craziest things he says.
Which
in the transcript.
One was the sister? That's the important thing when you watch the video.
Joanne asked about. She's the short one.
The short one.
I know that's what she asked about the sucker punching in Fayetteville, which he denied happened. And she goes, "In Fayetteville, do you want to see the video?" Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, Joshua says, we need diverse voices, but come on, when someone says that the defense budget is unnecessarily bloated and your guest responds with, is the thesis that we don't need a defense department, that is a straw man. Obama is not an entitlement and is not an anti-poverty program. Okay, that's that.
All right, okay. We are out of time. And I want to thank you all for being here.
Thank you for putting up with
Alan and Rosemary and Rich. Have a lovely weekend, and we'll come back and do it again on Monday. We'll be back with more program after the short break.
I'm sorry.